little white casket, wrote little notes on her casket. So it did ping and it went off and you got caught.
No. He's obviously the person who behind the cover.
Yes.
Dismembered, decapitated. Probably because you're trying to hide something and make sure certain details don't come out.
Show cans of soup were found with holes in the lids.
Hey guys, welcome back. So a little different view today. If you're watching this on my YouTube channel and not listening to the podcast version, you can see I'm coming to you from my living room and there's kind of a little bit of a mess behind me. It's because we're in the midst of moving. We move in literally 4 days. We're moving from New York to California. So please excuse the mess and all of the boxes behind me. I promise it bothers me way more than it bothers you. Before we jump into today's case, if you want to support the channel, don't forget to hit that subscribe button and review, comment, like, share this where you can. And if you want to be a part of the exclusive 10 to Life community, I'm going to leave that link in the description box below. It gives you exclusive access to different perks, different access points. That's a members-only community. So check that out if you're interested. And let's jump into today's case. Today's case came directly from a referral from you guys. So Mel, if you are watching this, thank you for sending this information and this case my way. And it takes us to Bridgetown, New Jersey, which is literally right across the river from me. Bridgetown, New Jersey is, like I mentioned, right across the river from me here in New York, and this case takes place in February 2019. And February here, let me just paint the picture. It is dark early where I know it is most places in the country. Very, very cold. Usually the average temperature is somewhere in the high 30s, snowing, ice cold at night when it's dark too. It's just like painstakingly cold winter. And like you think of true winter, it's not December or November. It is February. It is the worst month of all time. And this case takes place in February 2019, specifically on February 8th, 2019. On Friday, February 8th, around 6:30 p.m., 24-year-old Nakira reports to police that she had been attacked while walking with her two children on the way to the local Walgreens. She says that these people came up from behind her, blitz attacked her, knocked her to the ground. She says this attacker came up from behind her. She had her stroller with her 23-month-old son, Daniel, and she had her other infant child strapped to her chest. She says this attacker knocked her to the ground to where she fell on top of her infant and knocked the stroller over. It was out of her line of vision. And when she got up and realized what was going on, she was in complete panic. She looked up after being knocked to the ground and coming to when she heard the assailant run off, and then she looked around and she noticed that her son, her 23-month-old son, and the stroller and the attacker were gone. And she says it's by the grace of God that her infant son was strapped to her, because although she fell on top of him and was worried she had injured him, he wasn't able to have been taken by this assailant because he was strapped to her body. Two squads of officers immediately come to the scene, and they're fanning out all across the neighborhood looking for video surveillance, anything they can to find out, okay, who was this attacker? Who blitz attacked this woman and then stole and abducted her child? What's going on? A local detective brings Nakira, of course, into the station because he wants to get her statement. He wants to get exactly what happened, all of the details, so they can hopefully find her young son, Daniel, who's almost 2 years old, as quickly as possible. As police are interviewing Nakira, they discover that there are not only inconsistencies in her story, but there's inconsistencies in her claims that she had made and the video surveillance footage that they had discovered and had already reviewed. Which, you know me, if we're doing the ding, 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 boom, red flag number one. Shortly after the interview, State Detective George Williams was brought in to conduct a polygraph test with Nakira. And she's questioning why she's being looked at under a suspicious light and why she's currently being investigated and under any sort of suspicion, which, if they're just trying to give you a polygraph and ask you simple questions out of the gate, and you're asking, why are you looking at me that way? It's already a little indicative through your behavior that you're trying to hide something or that you're a little reluctant to fully help and cooperate. As the detective is setting up his equipment, he explains to Nakira, look, our goal here is to help you. Our goal is to find your son. Our goal is to gather all of the facts. It's not that you're being looked at as a suspect. It's not that you're being looked at in any particular way. It's simply because we need to gather all of the information possible. He goes on to tell her, look, a polygraph test is completely voluntary. If you don't want to take it, you don't have to take it. I'm going to advise you of your rights. You're free to take it. You're free not to. You let me know what you want to do. However, it would help this case drastically if we could get this information and you would agree to actually do this polygraph test. Nakira then, in a very abrasive way, says, well, what happens if I refuse? Why am I being treated like a criminal? What if I don't take the test? What happens then? There's a reason she's not wanting to take this test, or there's a reason she's very nervous about taking it, because if you're truly trying to figure out, okay, somebody abducted my son, where is he? Detectives are involved, police are involved, everybody's searching. You're giving up any answers you can. You don't care about a stupid polygraph test. You're doing it. The detective sees this behavior as odd as well, and so he asks her, point blank, what is it that you're afraid of? She tells him she's not afraid of anything, she's just really not keen on taking this test, and she ultimately ends up declining to take it. So now that the polygraph test is out and she's not doing that, the detective decides to really lean on her and just start asking her, okay, continue to walk me through verbally. What happened? Walk me through the events of your day, the events of the assault and the incident and the abduction. What happened? I want you to walk me minute by minute through this so I can gather all the information possible. And Nakira starts explaining that in the recent days, Daniel started rejecting his food, something that isn't really often toddler behavior. Sometimes they get picky, so she didn't think anything of it either. She was just like, he didn't like his usual food, so I went back to some of the other ones. But then when my infant son started rejecting his food as well, I thought that they were sick and that something was wrong. So I decided I needed to get them medication and get them Pedialyte because they weren't eating anything. So I decided to go and walk to Walgreens to get this Pedialyte. So I had my 23-month-old son in the stroller and I had my infant son strapped to me and we headed out. She then tells the detective, I can't remember where I was in my route on this walk, but somebody came up from behind me and pushed me to the ground. That's when I fell on top of my infant son who was wrapped and strapped to my body, and then the assailant started kicking me repeatedly. And then she says, right before the kicking stopped, somebody yelled, just grab it. And then the kicking stopped and she heard footsteps running away. She tells the detective, I didn't see the attackers, but as soon as I heard them run away, I got up and hid behind a hedge and I called 911. She also describes being not only confused by what was going on, but unsure if she had hurt her infant son when she fell on top of him, and that's when she makes the 911 call, which you can hear, she sounds very distraught and frantic.
Do you know where you're at right now? Can you describe what you see around you?
I was running,
Who are you running from?
Someone pushed me here, something happened.
All right, where are you right now? What do you see around you? Do you see a house number?
I'm in the bushes.
You're in where?
I'm in the bushes.
The bushes of where? Are you on Giles Street, Dino? I'm going to call 911 back so I can get a better location on you. All right, do me a favor, call 911 right back. 911, where's emergency? All right, the phone, okay. Are you injured? Do you need an ambulance?
I went red, but my side hurts.
Were you jumped?
I had to get pushed me on the ground.
All right. Is your child injured too, or no?
I can't be alone in my baby. He's crying.
Okay. Your baby's injured as well?
I fell on top of him.
You fell on top of him? How old is he?
I'm holding.
How old is he?
Over here.
Do you see the police?
Yes.
Okay.
So we can hear, she is completely terrified in this call. She sounds scared. She sounds confused. She's very muffled and quiet, like she doesn't want somebody to hear. We can hear her vaguely explain how she fell on top of her son and was worried he was injured. We can also hear her explain how she's hiding, but there aren't many other details that we gather from this call. She continues to tell the detective that it didn't even hit her that her son was missing until she was already on the phone with the police. We know that oftentimes in police interviews, they ask the same question over and over, several times, different ways, and she expressed her frustration of being asked the same questions repeatedly. And she says, my answer is not going to change. Now here we go. Ding. Another red flag. And the reason why this is a red flag is because, again, if you truly are trying to get as much information out there as possible to help find your son, you don't care how many different people are asking you questions. You don't care if they're asking you the same question 100 different ways, sliced up differently. You don't care. You're answering it. So after all of this, and after Nakira being somewhat combative during this interview, the detective finally asks, did you have anything to do with what happened to your son? To which she replies, no, of course not. What are you talking about? And he says, because we have video surveillance footage that shows after your 911 call, you walking very calmly down the street. Ding, red flag. She disputed that, saying, I wasn't walking calmly. What are you talking about? And then she immediately shuts down. And she says, I'm done. I want my lawyer. She starts to feel as though the walls are closing in. She knows that she is now the focus and she's beginning to panic. Just minutes later, her husband, Daniel Sr., enters the interview room to speak with her. And because of privileged information, this wasn't recorded. However, after their conversation, Nakira does agree to take that polygraph test. Before they jumped into the big questions that they wanted her to answer, they asked her a set of preliminary questions, such as trustworthiness, her physical health, her mental health, and other little benchmark questions that you ask before you get in so that you can really gauge that line and have something to measure the answers against. The detective asked Nakira if she physically harmed her son, if she knew her son's whereabouts, or if she was lying about taking him out that day in the stroller, all to which she said no. And the footage shows that she failed this polygraph completely. To every single question that she answered no, she failed. After this polygraph test, the detective sits Nakira down and tries to level with her. And he says, look, Nakira, there is no doubt in my mind that you did something to your son. What that is, I can only guess. And we often see in interviews that usually when you're trying to get a confession out of somebody, you're trying to almost let them know it's okay to confess. So you say, you know, it could have been an accident. Maybe you made a mistake. Tell me what happened. I'm sure you didn't mean to do it. And that's exactly the tactic that he used. And so he approached the conversation by saying, I'm sure there was an accident. Something happened in that house and you made a mistake and you're scared now, but it's okay. Tell me what happened. Let's help your son. And that is when Nakira's story begins to change. And she admits to the detective, I didn't take him out for Pedialyte. I took him out for medicine. And she begins to just sob. And she says, he was hurt and I had to get him medicine. She explains to the detective that she was carrying both of her children and that Daniel slipped out of one arm and that he fell down the stairs. And she says when she got to the bottom of the stairs, there was blood and that he was shivering and she completely panicked. And she says there was a laundry basket nearby, so she grabbed things out of the laundry, cleaning up the blood as fast as she could. But why are you cleaning up the blood and not tending to your son who just fell down the stairs and who is shivering, probably going through shock right now? And when you see there's blood everywhere, why are you more concerned with cleaning up the mess? This doesn't sound like an innocent injury. This doesn't sound like an accidental fall. This sounds like she is more concerned with covering up the scene of the crime or the injury rather than actually tending to her son and getting him medical attention. So again, bing, red flag. And I think we're at 3 now. Then she tells the detective that on this walk for the medicine, that she left him in the stroller purposefully because she wanted somebody else to find him and to get him help. And she did that because she said, if somebody else finds him, they'll think something else happened than what really happened and they'll get him help. What? What do you mean? What else would you want these strangers to think happened? It makes no sense. Detective also sees this story as, at best, odd, but most likely he saw this as just complete BS. And he asks her, if this fall was an accident, why didn't you just report it? And she says, I came up with the elaborate story, her words, I came up with the elaborate story because Daniel had previous bruises prior to the fall. He had previous bruises from being smacked, for not eating his food, and for telling me what he would and wouldn't do. I'm sorry, he is a 23-month-old child. That is what they do. They don't eat their food. They're picky. They tell you no. They tell you what they want to do. They scream. They throw tantrums. What are you talking about? So this is just another cover-up of hers. Ding, boom, red flag number 4. She tells police that she had smacked him on the arm, the leg, and his butt. And she tells police that she had smacked him so hard he had visible bruises on his face. Okay, this is not just a you get a spanking because you didn't eat your dinner, which is, I don't agree with personally anyway, but still, it's not even a case of that. You're leaving bruises on your child, and you're admitting that, and you're admitting to several body parts that you have hit, and you're leaving bruises. This is a case of child abuse. And then she says, I knew if I brought him in for the accidental fall, they would see these bruises on his body and on his face, and they would think that I did something to him on purpose, so I didn't know what to do. Kira tells the detective that the fall was real and that it was an accident, but that she concocted this whole kidnapping story because she was scared that she was going to be blamed for the injuries, as she should be. And Nakira tells the detective that she left Daniel in his stroller alive on that street in Bridgetown, New Jersey, hoping that a bystander would come by, see his injuries, take him to the hospital, and that he would seek medical attention, which still does not make sense at all. She's continuing to sob in this interview, and the detective is trying to calm her down, and he's saying, it's okay, just tell me where Daniel is. And she keeps saying, I don't know, I left him alive in that stroller, somebody must have grabbed him. And he tells her, point blank, We will find him. God is my witness. I will make it my mission to find this boy. And it is freezing outside. He may freeze to death. Don't make the mistake by being cold-hearted right now and not sharing this information. You are going to look like a cold-hearted mother. Don't make that mistake. Just tell me where he is. And at this point, he is pleading with her. He says, you've already made a mistake. Do not make a bigger one. We have surveillance footage all over this town, and we will find out where he is. Just tell us now so that you don't look so cold-hearted and it doesn't become a bigger mistake for you. Just tell us the truth. She is still sobbing and then firmly and clearly speaks to the detective, and she says, you can go look at the cameras. You're gonna see me with that freaking stroller and leave it on the street. That's all I know. And he leans a little bit more on the fact of, you don't wanna appear cold-hearted. Just tell me what happened. And all she says in return is, no matter what you say, I'm going to look cold-hearted. Not taking my son to the hospital because of my selfishness and me not wanting to be accused of his injury, people already are going to think I'm a monster and cold-hearted. So it's not going to matter what you say or what game you play. That's already going to be done. So clearly, all she is concerned about is her own image. Out of all of these things that he's saying, all of these pleas about your son may freeze to death, is he already dead, I think he's close to home, just tell me, Nakira, tell me. All she gathers from all that is the piece about her looking cold-hearted, and that's what she attaches to. And she says, it doesn't matter what you say or what I say, that's what people are gonna believe and that's what they're gonna think. Clearly just hung up on what people are gonna think of her and what the public opinion is gonna be of her, nothing else. And that right there shows so much of her personality trait and very key narcissistic behavior. Meanwhile, police were continuing their search for Daniel, and the search went all through the night of Friday night into the early hours of Saturday morning. And that search ultimately ended up in tragedy. And investigators say that when they went to the home, all of the windows were open and the residence reeked of a burning smell. Ding. What red flag number are we at now? And that Saturday morning, around 3 a.m., police discovered dismembered and burned remains under the family shed. The body parts were found in various trash bags and in a purse in the yard. Daniel Sr., Nakira's husband, identified that purse as belonging to Nakira. The purse also showed an apparent shoe print on top of it in dirt, which was consistent with an UGG boot, which is what Nakira was wearing that day, and she had had dirt on her knees as well. This was no longer a question of an accident that turned deadly or a fall that went unreported. This was calculated disposal of her own child's remains after she ripped him apart limb by limb. Her child who wasn't even 2 years old yet. And I can't help but think back to that 911 call when we heard her and she was frazzled and completely panicked. Or the elaborate story of her abduction. Or when she's sobbing, telling the detective how it was an accidental fall down the stairs. All of these stories, while she knowingly sits there, knowing that not only is her son dead, but that she had dismembered his body and it was literally in pieces, burned on her property. It is sick. Nakira was, of course, arrested early that morning on Saturday, February 9th. An autopsy report showed that Daniel was beaten to death and had suffered several bone fractures. And this, unfortunately, is no surprise because she had already admitted that she had hit him so hard she left visible bruises on his body and on his face. But how long was this child abuse going on? We don't know the answer to that. And how badly had she been abusing him? We can only speculate. Like so many other cases that we've seen this happen in, I imagine that this unfortunately was not new behavior, it was ongoing abuse, and this time was the last time it went too far and it resulted in his death. During the week of June 20th, 2019, just a few months later, Nakira was indicted by a grand jury. She was indicted on murder, disturbing of human remains, and various other charges. Those other charges included endangering the welfare of a child, tampering with evidence, and creating false public alarm. Those charges, in addition to the murder charge, was part of a 5-count indictment against the now 25-year-old Nakira. Shortly after, Nakira's attorney argued that Nakira was suffering from postpartum psychosis at the time of Daniel's death, and that she may not be able to mentally assist in her own defense. A court-ordered evaluation ended up clearing her of that in October of 2019. Fast forward to just last month, on June 3rd, a judge ruled that many of those statements that she made to police were inadmissible in court, and that those statements cannot be used at her murder trial. And the judge says that the reason for this is because she was not properly advised of her rights during all of those statements. He says that while she was read her first rights during the initial interview, she wasn't read her rights every single time and for the piece of self-incrimination. No trial date has been set yet, and prosecutors haven't announced how this new information is going to affect the charges or the trial itself. In my opinion, I don't think that she'll get out of the murder charges or the tampering with evidence charges because those pieces of information weren't included in her statements to police. I do, however, think there is an ability for her to either have reduced charges or completely tossed out charges in regards to creating false public alarm and creating false statements to police, because that, again, is what was covered in those interviews. However, you still have the 911 call where she did publicly make that cry for help, which was creating false public alarm. Maybe that'll still be included somehow. All I know is as long as she gets charged with his murder and the maximum punishment possible, I will, in my opinion, believe justice has been served. What are your opinions, though? Please leave your opinions and your thoughts in the comments below, and let's discuss. Thanks for listening to this case with me today, guys. If you want to support the channel, please don't forget to subscribe and share this where you can. And I love hearing from you, so please make sure that you comment below and let's get the discussion going. Until the next case, stay safe. Bye.